IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 63 of the Killing It Podcast. This is Carl Polachuk, and I'm joined by Ryan Morris and Dave Sobel, as always, and still at home.
Yes, distinctly still at home.
Although putting our toes out the door, I think.
I enjoyed a restaurant meal on Sunday with Charlie at an outdoor patio. We both commented about how well we thought it was all run, and we also said that we now have a filter of that we're looking for. Like, is it a place where I feel like they are managing that stuff well? Is now a filter for decision making, and I do my research before going.
I saw a picture of these huge hats that went out like 3 feet in every direction that they make their patrons wear so they can't get close to each other.
It was Burger King in Germany that did the big sombrero. I thought that was freaking brilliant.
I saw one that you wore your table. Like, it was like a big giant inflatable table and you wore it. But, and again, it's like, so most of them are totally silly, but like when you see those, but I will say it's super smart. The organizations that are being really clear about that, like, and I'll even say, like, you know, my wife is a video producer. She's literally been focusing on helping companies produce videos that they can put on their website of, here's all the things that we've done. So you have all of that information and you can see it and they can walk you through it before you even go. And I think that's a super smart way of focusing on this.
Yeah. See, and what I would say is, you know, one step at a time, the world is getting a little bit more open and we are trying to get things going. I think there's an unfortunate amount of, it's over, yay, let's go back to the way it was. And that's probably not a good idea. And the restaurant business is the most tangible example of that. Talk about business transformation. I mean, we're looking at opportunities here in technology to do new things a little differently, you know, be more relevant to our customers. If you were one of our brothers and sisters in the restaurant business or the entertainment business, you just got told, hey, you literally don't have a business unless you can run it completely different from how you've ever done it before. I think maybe they're carrying a little bit more of this weight than we are. We should probably be gracious about
yes.
that.
When we gracious, go understanding.
Always, I mean. What we noticed was, there's a lot of people who really want to get back out there right now. And I think when they were at home for so long, maybe they set aside their manners and they left them at home and they forgot to bring them with them when they went back out in public. And be nice, people. Come on.
The shutting down of civilization is going to have an effect as well.
So, yes. Right.
So today, from one of our most fun topics, I think, we've had in a long time, is what is going on with Facebook? And I got to say, this is one that's close to my heart. So
I'll set it up then, because they launched a new feature called Facebook Shops. And the idea being is to help small businesses get their product lines available out for you. You know, and you can run your entire e-commerce business on Facebook. And it is designed to help be cross-platform. So you can roll out on Facebook, on Instagram, and potentially out into WhatsApp. And what's interesting is of course, it's also kind of integrated with some of the other pieces. So it integrates with like a WooCommerce and such. So you can actually extend it out. And and I did a piece on this on the Business of Tech, because I think it is obviously a potential opportunity for technology companies looking to help their customers. But there's a flip side of that, is because you are then going all in with Facebook. And I knew I could tee it up and go, Carl, I suspect you have a thought or two about this.
Well, you know, what's funny is I was working for the last real job I ever had, 1993, 94. In 1993, we connected our HP 3000 Mini to the internet through what's called Telnet, because the World Wide Web didn't exist yet. And in 1994, web browsers were out, and then we're like, oh, how do we access this and blah, blah, blah. And the big promise of the internet, of the World Wide Web, was, guess what? Now you can build a platform where you can put absolutely all of your eggs in one basket. And that has been the dream of every major internet corporation since day one. And obviously, Facebook is now at the point where they can say, we've done it, the last piece is in place, come give us 100% of your attention and your money, and I will never do it.
Well, I mean, on one side, I hear this story and I go, wait a minute, it's almost like that sounds like somebody's done that strategy before, perhaps Amazon. And again, yes, there are upsides and there are terrific things. And as Carl has said many times, yeah, we love to sell through them for the reach and for the fulfillment and all of that. But we also remember there are some downsides and there are some controls and there are some command economy things going on there that are not seller friendly. And you should probably diversify. I think that Amazon has taught us that lesson. I think that, as we've discussed on this program many times before, platforms are a great idea. Who's in charge of the platform makes a huge difference as to whether or not it actually turns out to be a good business. For all the great ideas, I wonder what they're going to do with my data. I wonder how they're going to monetize my customers' data without my permission. Well, that would never happen, Ryan. It's not in the terms of service. For evidence, I would refer you to the last, I don't know, three and a half years of
the classic problem of that's been, you know, it's been true in newspapers and magazines for 250 years. You have no control over what they print on the outside of your ad. And on Facebook, you have no control over all the content, not just the advertising, but all of the arguments and all of the this and then that. And, you know, there's so many things on Facebook where you say the smallest little thing and it's somebody's keyword for you are an a-hole, right? And boom, they're off to the races. So,
obviously I wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be me if I hadn't brought up the fact that, like, hey, this is something of a Wild West, because there's not a great set of regulation to this. And we have monopoly powers that are leveraging this. I mean, at this point, if you're in e-commerce at some level, you are forced to deal with an Amazon. Now, you know, you may be forced to, you're only, from a digital advertising perspective, you really only have Google and Facebook. And you may soon be in a situation where your digital commerce, you're required by their monopoly power to be on these platforms at some level. Right.
And I, you know, I've taught three classes this week, so I don't know which class it was I said this in, but I gave the example that if you want to go find a good merchant service, somebody asked me this question, where do I find a good merchant services to take credit cards? And my only advice was, don't go to your primary business bank, because they want to, even if they give you a good rate, it's because they want to lock you in to the, you know, your line of credit and your checking account and this and that and the other thing and your merchant services. And if you then try to escape from any one of those services, they beat you up on all the others. And that is literally what Facebook not just is in suspected of doing, that is, they're clearly going to do that. It's,
yeah, they're absolutely that is the bully pulpit that they would have in that scenario, and they will use it. The magic word that we have learned from our friends in e-commerce ever since we got started with that concept is omnichannel. Right? Mm-hmm. It has risen to the level of a defined word in marketing textbooks that university students learn. What is omnichannel? Not one partner. Right? Like, I mean, the fundamental philosophy of omnichannel is I can be online, multiple locations, I can be offline, brick and mortar, and I can gracefully play among those channels, because I am the one who is orchestrating the interconnections, the localized messages. I am the one who is in charge of my go-to-market strategy, and I have multiple routes to market, technologies as well as physical platforms. If you surrender the control of the voice or the customization, localization, or what you're allowed to promote in those areas, that's no longer omni-channel, that's multi-channel. And if you don't appreciate the difference in that one little prefix there, omni means you are in control. Multi means you are serving many masters in their rules the way they want to tell you how to do it. And economically, it just makes it radically more expensive for a small business. You can't afford that. They know that. And as a result, they're going to just try to say, you know what, convenience and easy. Just do everything right here. Never explore the rest of the world and get to all of those customers. Not cool, right? Like, yeah, that's just abdicating your go-to-market strategy.
But I think it's important to note that I don't think anyone's going to be in a position to ignore them. I think you are not in a situation where you can say, well, you know, it's big, bad Facebook. I don't want to be involved. You know, I don't think that is the way that it's going to go. I think you're going to be, this is where, by the way, you can have a ton of value as a service provider, because you need to design a solution that finds the balance, that has your e-commerce solution, but it links out to these other ones so that you can be on multiple platforms, not cede the space to your competitors, but have control over enough of it that you can, knowing that you kind of have to play with this.
Well, and the other thing is, the good news about it is Facebook will be almost forced to have APIs that say, okay, you want to manage your finances with Quicken? Fine, you can plug it in over here. You want to get paid through PayPal? Fine, you can plug it in over here. And so even though they will want you to fall in love with their monopoly, they will, just because of the nature of the business, have to plug into many, many other things.
Yep. Absolutely. And see, this is the thing, right? The article that we're linking to, I think, makes an excellent point for you as a channel company. We keep saying, we should not just sell the pieces and parts. We should solve business challenges with technology for our customers. And often the advice is, in addition to the infrastructure and the platforms and tools that we sell to our customers, we need to also step up into their data layer and even into their application layer. And this is a space where there is a robust set of opportunities that you can make a lot of money on if you get in there. Things like BigCommerce, like WooCommerce, like Shopify and others, those are technology platforms that beg for integration with other systems and data. And by the way, they desperately need security attached on all of them. And they have terrible channel strategies. That's not the way they think of going to market.
Yeah. So I'm going to use the random mention of the word security to transition into our next topic.
But security, it's always a transition, right? Like, which is interesting. So I will then try and morph that into the actual topic. So the topic I wanted to bring up for topic two today was a little bit of an open discussion, because around lobbying and around how and us as an industry should be responding to the pressures that are coming from regulation. We've been saying for a while, I've said it a ton on my content, that regulation is coming. And now we're in a position where, okay, I think a lot of nodding has happened. We've been talking about it long enough. And now we're at the point where, okay, what do we do about that? Because, you know, the point we've been making for the past couple of weeks on this show, on others, is that, look, it can happen to us or we can be involved. But now we're at the point where what's the next step? How do we pull this together? And I wanted to have a bit of a dialogue here on thinking on what now? Because we've got a bunch of people all nodding. Carl, I know you've had some conversations in your community. I've had some conversations with a number of people saying, you know, hey, we're also interested in this. Now what? Who should do it? How do you band together? How does quote unquote activism happen at a business level?
Especially since, and you know, the connection, just so people know, if you haven't been listening to every word that we've said over the last year, the lobbying is connected to security essentially by the fact that the Borg discovered our universe, because Kyle Ardoin looked around the state of Louisiana and said, hey, wait a minute, MSPs are not doing what they promised they're doing, and they are, you know, blah, 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 down the road to ransomware and huge costs and so forth. I think that we need to have an intelligent view about what our future looks like. And the reason that, you know, Dave says we need to participate in what it looks like is legislation doesn't come out of nowhere. Somebody is going to bring a draft to state legislatures and say, here is a definition of an IT service provider. Here is a definition of liability regarding ransomware. Here's a definition of ransomware. Every legislation starts with 12 pages of definitions of every word you can possibly imagine. And we need to literally help them define what our industry is.
Yes. See, and I will add an urgency kicker to this conversation, right? We were having a conversation with a client the other day about the changing buyer's journey. And that's not news to any of us, right? We've been hearing this for a while. What it fundamentally translates into is additional humans are involved in the buying process and decision-making around technology. In fact, if you look at all the analysts have been predicting it for years, we arrived at that tipping point recently where more than 50% of the technology dollars are actually spent outside of the IT department, at less than 50% inside the IT department. Here's the kicker on regulation. If people who are business professionals who are new to the buying process are the ones defining your best practices and the legislation associated with them, they don't understand what you do for a living. They don't know the history. They don't understand why things are the way they are, but they are already organized and lobbying. Accounting firms are there. Lawyers are there. Business professionals, CEOs, boards of directors, those folks lobby. And the one group that doesn't necessarily lobby is, you know, you and me over here going, hey, I'm an IT professional. I have a lot of really good ideas. The last thing you want is for this phenomenon of non-IT professionals buying IT to translate into, let us tell the IT world how to do IT. That would be a terrible outcome. And that's what's there by default, unless we do something about it, because they're already lobbying.
Right. And there's other elements of technology that are also that are lobbying. So, I mean, obviously, telecommunications providers are lobbyists, social media companies are lobbyysts. Like there's, you know, there are large equipment vendors are focused on lobbying. There are lots of portions of this industry that have already stepped up. Now, generally, they are stepping up in two ways. They step up on an individual level. So, you know, for example, Google and Facebook and such have armies of lawyers that handle their own individual lobbying. And then they also have trade associations that they work with that do that as well. You know, telecommunications has lots of them because that is a very much a regulated industry at some level. From a service provider perspective, this is not as organized. We as general have not been as organized, particularly as you look at small and medium-sized companies. I would expect that the ones that are involved in federal contracting, the large players at that level, they've done work on this. But if you're at a small bit, you know, the small end of the industry, you will probably not. Now, I got asked this question recently, so I will sort of repeat it here, is just because you're small does not mean your voice is not important, particularly because there are lots of you. 93% of all service providers do less than $5 million in revenue. That is a lot of people controlling a lot of portions of the economy. That is an important political block when, you know, thinking about this from a regulation perspective. So when you think, you know, hey, I'm too small to matter, you aren't when in aggregate, when thought about in aggregate.
So the interesting thing is, you know, if you think about who gets legislated in our industry, on one hand, you've got really, really big companies because, you know, they have to regulate the frequencies that are being used. They have to regulate monopoly relationships and all of that. And then the other thing is what doesn't get regulated per se, but is huge in government is buying services and products. And there, if you've been selling into state agencies or federal government, you know, there's schedules of things, and those schedules include, oh, check the box, I want IT support. Well, that box is going to become a lot more complicated really fast, because as soon as they actually look at it and say, well, wait a minute, I want the kind of IT services where I can hold them responsible if there's a virus, and I can make sure that remediation is a piece of that. And right, which, to be honest, just makes it more expensive. But you have to, this gets back to what something we've said 100,000 times, you have to do what you promise you're going to do. You
right.
Yes, please.
Manage service provider and then do break fix work. Those days are coming to an end very quickly.
But see, I think that's exactly where we bring this down to the what are you going to do about it level. I think all three of us agree, and we will aggressively advocate, this kind of regulation is actually going to be a good thing. There's too much randomness. There's too much overpromise, overdeliver. There's too much immaturity in the industry, and we will benefit from some professionalism and from some standardization. I think we need, as a maturing industry segment, to be willing to be self-regulated and or held accountable. I invite that kind of structure and definition. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure I'm the one who actually gets to voice my opinion.
Well, right. I want to be part of the solution, not
you're going to go through that whole process. You want to make sure that you're the one who's standing.
So I'll make it really, really, I mean, I would say if you're listening to this podcast and you at some level think this is important, you should talk to your colleagues and find other voices that think it is too. And I think that is your first actionable step, is to do that, because you need to figure out who else is out there to start making it not just your own voice, but start reaching. I mean, obviously you can say, well, the three of us on this podcast are interested. Now you, the one listener, who else? And how can we bring these people together? That is the next bit.
Very good. That is topic number two. So, we've been doing this life after pandemic segment for quite a while now. And today, as we are recording this, there's a lot of stuff going on in our society we just can't ignore, and it's going to affect what our life looks like after the pandemic.
Yeah, and I think it's important, this, we're recording this, dates matter. So we're recording this on Thursday, June 4th. And we know that we normally release these on Tuesday. So there, things may have changed since we talked, but here's the context of when. During this week, there's been protests all around the United States. There has been varying levels of that. There's been federal action. There's been state action, and a very large movement of conversation around, including in the business world. And I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about during this time was what does that mean? Because I know I was saying before to these guys, it's like, I do a daily tech news podcast. Sometimes this week it's felt a little small compared with some of the stuff that I've seen elsewhere. But I know one of the things that I've been really focused on is thinking about where that voice can matter and where I can make a difference going forward. I've done a couple of things myself. Is for example, I've been a lot more quiet this week in terms of any organic social and that kind of stuff, because I'm trying to listen more than speak. And I think the second thing I've also done is recognize that, hey, we have to be recognized that on this podcast, it is three white guys talking about things. So we will never fully understand what is happening at all levels, but that doesn't mean we can't listen and help. And the one thing that I've been thinking about a lot is where we can, after this, if you're already in a time where norms have been challenged, going even before the civil unrest and the stuff that happened with and the aftermath of George Floyd's death, we already were in a world where lots of norms had been challenged around coronavirus and everyone working from home. I've been thinking a lot about what I can do to challenge even my own comfort space. For example, am I networking in the right place? Am I expanding my communication to ensure it does meet so that I'm more active about being in a diverse environment? Maybe are there ways to speak up when I look around in a room and go, wait a second, this doesn't look like society or our customer base. And I think those are the lessons that you can take away that are very actionable on an individual level that you can put forth in business. And I would be completely remiss if I didn't say, by the way, that's really good for your business, because looking more like your customers is always a good thing.
Yeah, that is an excellent piece of advice. And it brings it back to the basic reality. You live in this world, you work in this world, and your business exists in the context of the market that you serve. If that market is changing, you either change with it or you get left behind and become yesterday's news. I agree with your rationale completely. Things have changed, and in a time of disruption and change, it is much more reasonable to challenge and change everything, right? Like that will, we've said this before, if somebody had come to you 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and said, you know what, I need you to close your office, do everything from home, and serve all of your customers entirely remotely, absolutely, every single one of us, even in the technology industry, would have said, no, that's not possible. That's unreasonable. And yet, here we are. It wasn't even remotely possible until there was no other choice. And then suddenly, we didn't want to be dinosaurs and we made it happen. I think that makes sense in the context of our social conversation. Back in the beginning of the pandemic, we went to lengths to congratulate a lot of the big technology vendors and challenge a lot of you as small companies when they were paying their workers who were being furloughed, even though they were not allowed to show up and work, the support staff, the janitorial staff, things like that. We made a big point to say a lot of the brand names in our industry were right out front and saying, this is what we think, this is where we're going to put our money where our mouth is, and we congratulated them for that. In the last week or so, we have seen almost an equal number. I won't go quite so far as to say equal number of these big brand names who have come out and said, we are here, we stand in solidarity with these protests, we understand the difference between what we want to change and the way that people are trying to make these changes. Let's do something different. Holy cow, what a great opportunity for us. I will say personally, I have always been amazed at how society progresses and our technology industry manages not to. I mean, as much as we are defined as innovation and cutting edge and introducing brand new things that have never existed before and suddenly they are a viable business model, I can't tell you how many meetings that I go to still in our industry and I look around and I go, well, there's 45 of us here and there's precisely zero females. Holy crap, that's not okay. We need more points of view. And our industry has responded. We've seen many, I think, very effective, meaningful things done around women in the business of technology. Okay, that was a nice step. It's not the last step. And the next one needs to go much more tactically into diversity in the technology business, because you live in a diverse world. And the fact that I can still walk into a meeting of 20, 50, 500 technology professionals, and while I may today see more females than I did a couple of years ago, I still don't see many diverse faces. And that's something we can change. And the best piece of advice I have heard all this week is, it's not enough just to not be the bad guy. You have to proactively be the good guy. What are you going to do about it, right? Who do you hire? Who do you interview? What are your outreach programs? Do you educate the community, et cetera? This is not like I'm going to hold my breath and sit back and wait for the world to get better and stop burning down. Be a voice of positive action.
Is that, you know, those of us who are on the inside and are, have some influence, we need to engage younger people and more diverse people into these conversations, right? I was very happy to interviewed Suzanne Tedrick for my recent podcast. She just wrote a book on being a woman of color in technology. And, you know, you talk about a lonely road, but this industry is visibly not diverse. And to the extent that we can join communities like the CompTIA Advancing Tech Talent and Diversity Community and others, we need to do that. And, you know, you can't just sit and say, well, it's not my problem. It's, that's like saying it's not my society. This is the world we live in, and we need to open our arms and say, you know, let's make sure that we are letting everybody be part of this conversation.
Right. And again, and going a little bit further than our comfort zone. And I think that the challenge, I know I'm going to challenge myself on this, is, you know, make sure that I'm networking in different places, or that I'm making an effort to think a little differently on those patterns that may have always happened. And I'm also looking at it not just from the fact that, first off, it is the right thing to do. Second, it is also good for business. And then the third is that there is actually an interesting, I was listening to a thought leader on this topic, talking about how the fact that you have to recognize that we're working from something of a significant deficit. If we're working on a systematic set of change, it is, we've dug a pretty big hole. And yes, it's good that you've made some small positive steps, but we got a long way on the to get out of the hole. And you don't stop investing because you've only done one or two good things. You have to keep investing in order to accelerate the change to get to that net zero place before it truly does start showing the benefits. And if you think about it in business terms, it does help you understand we've got a lot more investing to go in order to really truly get to zero, and then beyond that to see the true benefits.
Well, and to be very tactical about this, it will not be easy and it will not be comfortable when we do these things. That's good, right? If all we do is go to our comfort zone, then it's always going to stay the way that it has been. Our business advice in the last 90 days, I can't count the number of times we've talked with clients in the vendor world, in the solution provider world, domestically as well as internationally. And we have said, it is not safe nor wise to assume that post-pandemic, we will go back to the way that things were, that the old normal is the new objective. And we just want to get back to where it's easy and comfortable. And we have said, be agile, be change friendly, look for opportunities and drive yourself forward. Cool. Be comfortable being uncomfortable. I think that is the way that we all need to embrace this. Individual businesses, industry segments, society-wise, it's not supposed to be easy to go through change, but it can be done if you do this on purpose.
My friend Randolph posted a thing on Facebook the other day that he was chatting with somebody from his college days, and Randolph's older than me. And so he said, you know, it's very sad. He's talking to his roommate from college. Sad that we're having the same conversation. Not the same conversation, but the same topic is being discussed as 50 years ago. And let's just hope that we have changed both the conversation and the topic in the next 50 years. It's really, change can take place very, very quickly. We just need to be open to having those discussions.
Yeah, and face some hard, in something of a, I don't want to say blame-free, but I mean the spirit of that, where it's like we're trying to work together to get to a better place. Don't dwell so much on the previous. Figure out the ways that you can do things differently. And by the way, that's the direction. So hopefully ending on a bit of a positive way of thinking about this is, I still think this is a massive opportunity. And if these are areas that we set out to change the conversation, we often don't have enough of these conversations. I hope this starts some thinking. And I think I'd love to hear from listeners on this is other ideas on things to do, other things that you can ways that you can invest to make those small changes that add up and make a huge difference.
And if you agree or disagree, send us your notes at killingit.smallbizthoughts.com.
We totally want to hear.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. That will do it for episode 63 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.